Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey, everyone, we'll start the show in just a second, but first...
Oh, my God, we have an exciting new client, Literati.
Oh!
It's the number one book club for kids.
Oh, yeah.
I had to do some digging to find people young enough, but my ex just had a baby.
My nephews. 3 and 7 years old.
So perfect. We sent it to both of them. We're going to get reviews. It is for ages 0 to 12.
Yeah.
Right? And libraries, schools, bookstores are all closed.
Yeah.
Right? Literati has you covered with something truly unique. This subscription book club for kids was founded by two women to make it easy to find interesting books delivered right to your doorstep. No more scrolling online trying to find that perfect book for your child or to give as a gift. Each Literati box contains 5 books based on a theme with exclusive original art, personalized note to your child. What kid doesn't love receiving something in the mail? Home delivery, super important right now. And with their curated selection, only keep your favorites. Send the rest back for free for a limited time. Try it with Travis's nephews. Go to Literati.com/Stephanie for 25% off your first 2 orders. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go to Literati.com/Stephanie, 25% off your first 2 orders. That's Literati.com/Stephanie. Terms and conditions apply.
Thank you, Stephanie. And now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Zeska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
It's a different world. Feeling alone. And sometimes feeling helpless. But for over 240 years, we've been there with you. We're the idiots. And we'll continue to do what we've always done. Ignore science. Ignore facts. Ignore the welfare of the majority. And do the whatever we want to, whenever the we want to. Now, more than ever in these challenging times, we'll be there. And finding ways to stay close. Irresponsibly close. Criminally close. Hugging and spreading our message along with a contagion. We're the idiots, and we're here for you. Well, mostly for ourselves. And we'll stay here, whether you like it or not.
Bob Zeska!
Bob Zeska, you really are sick.
The Bob Zeska Show.
Rocky Mountain Mike, the great Richard Hensel right there. I love that so much. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, April 28, 2020. And this is the Bob Zeska Show presented by BubbleGenius.com. Hi, what's up? My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. Day 1,195 of the Trump crisis, 190 days until the 2020 presidential election. And from Buzz Burbank News and Comments, sitting right over there, it's my friend Buzz Burbank. Hi, Buzz.
Hey, hey. Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Great to be back. You know, he's Bob, I'm Buzz, and we're both Nobel Prize winners. I don't know. The shutdown, it may be getting to me a little bit. I got a monkey on my back.
Okay.
I'm up to 2 cans of Lysol a day.
You too? Oh, man. I'm jonesing for Mr. Clean right now.
I'm Buzz, and I'm a Lysolholic. Here's today's Bob Zeska Show health tip.
All right.
If you plan on swallowing ultraviolet light, be sure and drink plenty of sunscreen first.
Always a smart tip, yeah.
Get a bad burn if you don't.
That's right.
There is, however, a very, very good medical news today, I think. I heard that scientists are hard at work developing a vaccine to protect us from Donald Trump.
Thank God. It's about time. I swear.
Could use that.
He's scientists.
A lot of states, as you know, are reopening now in the middle of this pandemic. They're opening up, you know, nail salons, all that. Yeah. I'm all for the reopening of movie theaters, for example, but only if they just show the movies Outbreak and Contagion. Is it the only?
That's good. You just want to scare the shit out of me. That's what you want to do. That's it.
That's the idea. Yeah, well, it might help. I'd help the idiots. So here we have Joe Biden trying to decide on a running mate.
Mm-hmm.
And we know it could be Amy Klobuchar, Liz Warren, Stacey Abrams, Kamala Harris, Gretchen Whitmer, or Tammy Duckworth. So think of it as a really odd season of The Bachelor.
Rocky Mountain Mike, here we go.
I tried to watch this coverage, but I had to bail. Remember when they said the virus slows?
Whoa.
If disinfectant shed gets exposed.
Whoa.
So Trump thought he had found the holy grail. Just find yourself some Clorox shooting in your tail.
Bleach, baby, there in your head. It's the remedy.
Bleach, baby. Yeah, Rocky Mountain Mike.
Oh, man.
Another classic.
He has a way of coming up with the one angle that not everybody else came up with, which is what I
love
about having him here.
Absolutely. And please, by all means, send him more song requests. He loves that. He loves getting song requests on Twitter. Absolutely.
Oh, man, are you going to hear from him?
All right.
Listen, here's how weird what we're doing is right now.
Yeah.
As I'm in the green room before, you know, doing the coming out and doing the jokes.
Yeah.
And while I'm doing, not while I'm telling the jokes, but just before that, while you were saying hello and all of that. And just after that, a little bit while we were laughing along to Mike, I was putting up bulletins that we just crossed the 1 million mark for infections, infections in the U.S.
Wow.
And I was posting that news on the intranets while we were doing the comedy, and it just goes to show what a bizarre time we live in.
Yeah, it really is bizarre. And in fact, yesterday, Rocky Mountain Mike singing about the Trump press conferences, the Trump shows that we're getting every evening.
Yes.
Until recently, we're going to get to that in a second. But in one of the more recent ones, in fact, it might have been the one from yesterday, because I know he didn't do any over the weekend, right? But he did one last night. And I think in the context of last night's Trump show, he moved the goalposts. Remember the guesstimate, the Trump guesstimate
of
the death toll. Yeah.
Well, that was a real estimate. By the way, from a college in London. I can't think of it right now.
Mm-hmm.
A college in London made a very real estimate that there could be as many as 2.2 million deaths in the United States. But they said from the very beginning that was if we did absolutely positively nothing about it.
Right.
So that was the biggest it could go. Well, just exactly as you predicted, and I thought of you when I heard him say this last night. He's using that 2.2 million now to show what a good job he's doing of only killing 56,000 people, or the better part of that. I won't give him blame for all of the deaths, but he certainly could have kept that number smaller by tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, it's crazy the thing that he's doing now, the strategy that he's taken, because at the time when he was talking about 2 million potential deaths in order to make himself look like a miracle worker when it comes in under that number. But what he's doing now is he's underestimating, which is the craziest thing. For the longest time, he was talking about 50 to 60,000 deaths in the United States. Now, as of last night during his Trump show, he moved the goalpost to 60 to 70,000 deaths.
70, I think it's up to 74,000 now. It could go as high as the official count. And I'll tell you why it's been adjusted upward now. It's not just coming from him. The White House Coronavirus Task Force has adjusted it upward based on the models that they're looking at. There's one model in particular that they like because it is among the more optimistic, but it's considered a pretty credible model that the White House is using. And the reason it's revised the death count up from 60,000 whatever to 70,000 whatever is because it knows that some states are opening up prematurely and that the numbers are now going to go higher than they would have if states were not opening so carelessly. Now, hello, Georgia.
Yeah, Jesus God. Right. And in fact, Donald Trump was meeting with Ron DeSantis of your state there. Between both of them, between DeSantis and Trump, there's maybe, I don't know, 2 million brain worms. I mean, I was just trying to come up with an estimate of the number. We're talking about deaths. We're talking about coronavirus infections. Yeah. But the number of brain worms is still an important statistic these days.
Yeah, it is. Somebody, why is no one counting the brain worms?
No one is doing that. No one's estimating
it. We need brain worm testing.
That's right. I'm just looking and listening. That's all I'm doing and determining, oh, I see. Ron DeSantis, about 1 million brain worms. Donald Trump, also probably around 1 million brain worms. Between the two, we got 2 million brain worms sitting there in the Oval Office. How nice is that?
There are states that are still desperate for testing materials.
Yeah.
And DeSantis, Florida's Ron DeSantis, the governor, contacted Trump or was talking to Trump and said, oh, no, we have more than we need.
Yeah,
We're set. We're more than set down here. Well, first of all, he's wrong because he's limiting the population that's tested. But secondly, the reason he has such a wealth of tests, and while other states are struggling to get them, is because he's, you know, one of Trump's boys.
Yeah.
And that's how that works. That's how this is all based. I mean, Trump talking about not providing rescue funds to blue states. Like, that's how we've always done things, of course, is whoever gets to be in power gets to starve the other side. It's just insane, Jesus but Christ. That's what we're dealing with now.
Yep, and it's really very much like a Goofus and Gallant kind of situation that we've been looking at throughout this entire thing. You remember Highlights for Children, Goofus and Gallant?
I do, and I stole. Well, actually, Letterman stole from that, and then I stole from him. He came up with something, and I don't remember if his was also Mr. Do and Mr. Don't, but that's ultimately what I called it on my radio show when the brief period I had something that resembled one. it's like the right thing to do and the wrong thing to do sort of in comedy form. But Goofus and Gallant from Highlights.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Mr. Do and Mr. Don't.
Well, I mean, Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump, for that matter, are obviously the Goofus and all of this, the Goofuses or the various Goofuses or the Goofi. They're now just blowing off ventilators. They're blowing off testing. They're just, we have all these extra kits. We have all these extra ventilators. We're just going to start sending them overseas because who needs them here? We don't need them here. And what they don't understand is through their premature urge to reopen the economy, they're going to precipitate another upswing in coronavirus cases, and we may need those ventilators. See, that's Goofus. Goofus is fucking up right now. Goofus should be stockpiling as many ventilators as Goofus can get his hands on. But instead, Goofus is sending them everywhere else and getting on TV every day and saying, we don't need any ventilators. Hey, remember when ventilators were a thing? Well, they could be a thing again. I mean, this is just, again, the horrendous planning that we've been hearing about all this time.
More than that, we need the testing and the tracing. Almost more than we need the ventilators at this point. And in some ways, and I'm sure there are still needs for ventilators here and there, but I haven't heard much about them lately as far as shortages go.
Right.
What we're hearing now about shortages are the tests and the methods of tracing. And that is what the experts say. your public health experts, your epidemiologists say that we need before we can open the country again safely. Yeah. And I had such a great time. I was not a great student in school. I was a strong C.
Welcome, my friend, to the strong C club.
Well, it was the math that dragged down the overall.
Yes,
that is the
slogan of the strong C club. It was always math. Yeah, was the one that plummoxed it.
But I had such a history was not of great interest to me. And I blame the history teachers for that, because the truth is, as a lot of us know now as adults, is history can be fascinating. Mm-hmm. In addition to teaching us a great deal about where we are now. I had such a great time in the research for last week's newscast that I did, looking up things about 1918. I did a lot of my own research, like what was showing at the movies and who was on top in sports and those sorts of things, so I could help make it more relatable, that people could sort of understand what the people back then faced. And all you have to do is look at the 1918 flu pandemic, to know what's going to happen to places like, especially Georgia. Get ready to see Georgia. Atlanta will be in flames again, only this time it will be with a deadly disease. This will do more damage than Sherman. Yeah. I'm maybe weak on my history there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Possible.
And this is what they're up against. And, it's like, who could have seen this coming? Well, anybody who's read about the flu pandemic of 1918, it certainly had that effect on San Francisco, which was actually better than most cities, even back then, when it came to trying to control that pandemic.
Speaking of 1918, I'm so relieved that Donald Trump is still doing his Trump show. Otherwise, we wouldn't have known as of yesterday that 1918 was over 100 years ago, Buzz. That is the
wrong
kind of information that we're getting from the Trump show. In fact, he said, the full quote was, "You all know what happened in," of course, he didn't say 1918. He said 1917 again.
Of course.
He keeps saying it because
he loved the movie.
Right. As long as he keeps saying 1917, then the truth becomes 1917. But he said, "You all know what happened in 1917. That's over 100 years ago.
Well, he figures
really.
Maybe he figures that if we have COVID-19 in 2020, then naturally, the flu pandemic of 1918 was really 17.
Yeah, yeah. And as we said before, someone just taught Trump the word sarcasm, because he's used it as an escape hatch twice in less than a week. Once to wiggle out of his disinfectant and sunlight inside the body somehow. That was sarcastic, apparently. And then over the weekend, his series of noble tweets, about the Nobel Prize, and how all those reports. See, this gets lost in the mix of him misspelling Nobel.
What a palooka.
He was also saying that all these reporters won Nobel Prizes as a consequence of their Russia reporting, and all those prizes should therefore be stripped away. Well, he's talking about Pulitzer Prizes. He's not talking about Nobel Prizes or even Nobel Prizes. So that kind of got lost in the mix.
Let's take a moment and examine why did he say Nobel? And we know why he misspelled it. It's because he's stupid.
Because he's an idiot.
But let's ask ourselves, why was he thinking about the Nobel Prize? Because he has been pissed ever since Barack Obama won one and has sat on the sidelines to see him bypassed for that same award. And that is an obsession with him. He is obsessed with the Nobel Prize. And so that's what was on his mind when he attacked journalists who've won Pulitzer Prizes. And I can't think of a smarter approach than attacking Pulitzer Prize winners. I just don't think there's a better way to go.
But in that case, it was sarcasm, right? Which is why he deleted all three posts, because they were strong jokes.
I hope I can find this here. In the Washington Post, the online version, if you can find this, Dana Milbank, the columnist there, occasionally hits one out of the park. And he certainly did in the last 24 hours on their website, where he talked about, here we go. The headline is "Some Totally Non-Sarcastic Praise of Trump's Comic Genius." And on that subject, you were talking about maybe about the second or third time he's used the sarcasm excuse. Milbank is able to document in his very funny column today all the other times he has said he was joking or being sarcastic. And it goes back through the whole Russia thing. It goes, he has since being president, certainly, used this sarcasm excuse to say, here, I'll just pick this one line. Trump has shifted the boundary so that sarcastic means roughly a term applied retroactively to something I wish I hadn't said.
Yeah, I mean, again, we saw Donald Trump retconning a fuck up, which is something that he's wanted to do. He does this all the time. What he does is when he screws up, he does the Pee Wee Herman gambit, you know, where Pee Wee Herman's doing all those stunts on his bicycle, and then he crashes into the curb, does a triple somersault in the air, and lands on his ass in front of a group of kids, stands up, dusts himself off, and goes,
I meant to do that.
Yeah.
Right.
I love
sure. that. Sure, you did. Sure, that was entirely intentional, right? I mean, again, it's like the behavior of a little boy, like a second grader at recess.
Said it all along.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's just unbelievable how glaringly obvious all of his little tricks are. I mean, because it's all the stuff that we've seen our entire lives from the worst liars, the worst people in the world that we have all known. I mean, we've all known at some point features of Donald Trump in our everyday lives, haven't we?
His emotional development stopped at 7 years of age.
And I wonder what caused it. I'd be interested to know the effects that age, like what was happening to him when everything stopped as far as his emotional and intellectual development.
You know, from everything I've read, it's Fred. It's his dad.
Yeah, probably.
You know, yeah.
Fred and Cruella Trump, his parents, you know.
His father taught him at a very young age, eat or be eaten.
Yeah, that's true. And so we learn now that Trump has been repeatedly warned about the pandemic back throughout January, February, in a series of intelligence PDBs. I mean, once again, a national disaster. And suddenly, in the wake of it, we hear about PDBs that were issued to the president. The president was briefed on these things and yet did nothing. I mean, we compare it to George W. Bush in the My Pet Goat scenario, right? Where Bush is sitting there for 9 minutes.
But here's where you're really right about this comparison.
Yeah.
And that is that in the presidential daily briefs, George W. Bush was told a month before 9/11 that bin Laden was intent on attacking America.
Yep.
Determined, I believe, was the word.
Yeah.
Determined to stage an attack on the U.S. And that was overlooked or missed or ignored. And this was discovered in congressional investigations, congressional oversight, that followed 9/11. Adam Schiff is now talking about, if they can ever get back together again in spite of the virus, Adam Schiff is talking about an investigation into the same thing. The fact that Trump, as you were saying there, received these classified presidential daily briefs throughout the months of January and February, while he continued to deny anything was happening. If only he doesn't read them, obviously. They're daily briefings, but he only checks in on them 2 to 3 times a week.
Yeah.
And when he does, he gets an oral presentation that he sort of half listens to, and so he doesn't really get it. So he's basically just blown off these presidential briefings that warned Bush of the coming of 9/11 attacks and that, in this case, warned Trump of the coming of a pandemic. And I don't know if it was because he didn't. And, you know, aides would repeat this stuff to him throughout the day in case he missed it. And even then, it just didn't seem to soak in. He continued to deny and delay. And I honestly think part of it is wishful thinking. He was hoping it would just all go away.
There were dozens of these classified briefings. And, of course, Trump routinely skips a lot of those PDB readings.
Right.
Because he can't sit around long enough to actually read something, especially things that are longer than one page and aren't broken out into no fewer than, what is it, 9 bullet points? Like, he can't read anything more than bullet points.
And it's not like they've made these briefings hard to read. In fact, they've boiled them down to short little paragraphs for each section, for each item, so that he's not overwhelmed by it, and so that it can be read to him or presented to him in what would normally be an easily digestible way. Even then, he still only half hears it.
And he's unattracted by anything that doesn't involve how popular he is or how well or poorly he's going to be doing in terms of his re-election chances. Yeah, so
it's all about that. I think that came from Fred also. I think that's another thing he was taught by his father.
Right, and more specifically, I think you can get a better understanding of what Trump is doing from a day-to-day or second-to-second point of view as long as you're seeing everything through the prism of re-election. Because once you note that his primary goal right now is to get reelected, so everything is geared toward that endeavor. Yes. Mm-hmm. Once you start to see it from that point of view, everything he's doing makes absolute and total sense. Oh, that's right. He's saying this because he needs to get reelected. Oh, he's saying this. And it's not always a direct jump from statement to reelection. Sometimes there are intermediary steps in all of that where, for example, Donald Trump talking about the economy, for example, or reopening the economy, the, you know, the quote unquote reopening, whatever that means.
Right.
And that indicates trying to create the economic scenario that will allow him to get reelected. So it's everything is leading toward that, and much more so than a typical first term commander-in-chief. We're talking about a guy who is exclusively geared toward this.
His every breath.
Yeah. For no other reason but to continue to expand his legacy, but more than even that is the drive to keep himself out of prison, because that is going to be the whole thing. He knows that if he loses, there's a really strong chance that the next AG that comes in is going to say to his or her U.S. attorneys from Eastern District of Virginia
I'm sure Kamala Harris will let all that slide.
That's right. She's just that kind of person.
She's a forgiving for those sorts of things, isn't she?
Oh, my God. Well, you know, talk about lawsuits. We're talking about all of these now.
Criminal
these
charges.
But on top of all of that, we're looking at a series of these AstroTurf groups that are now fanning out and holding more of these protests. Another Red Hat group plans to protest in a series of states coming up. So watch for coronavirus outbreaks in the following areas, places like Mobile, Alabama, Birmingham, all across the country, from Alabama to Wisconsin. There's one in Richmond, Virginia, Houston, Texas, Concord, New Hampshire, Raleigh, North Carolina, Annapolis, Maryland, on and on and on.
Sure.
Chicago, Hilo, Hawaii, Maui, Hawaii, Kauai, in Hawaii, Honolulu, Hawaii, a bunch of Hawaii protests. Just dumb. And what we're going to see out of all of this is either these little mini spikes, or if the protests get big enough, we could see actual calculable spikes state to state where these things will take place.
I think we will. Watch the locations of some of the bigger protests of this past weekend, because in 3 weeks, put it on your calendar, in 3 weeks, they will have infection spikes there. The organizer of the protest in one of the Carolinas, I don't remember which one, I'm sorry.
Reopen NC.
North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Is now tested positive for the virus. it's not hard to see how this goes. I do want to reiterate the point that I made last week for everybody to keep in mind and remember that these are fringe groups. This is not representative. You look at the latest polling, 82% of Republicans think it's too early to reopen. You know, a greater number than that of all voters think it's too early to reopen. And the experts certainly think so, too. We're only seeing about, and remember, months and months ago, I said something about 15% of the population is crazy. when you begin to look at these numbers at, okay, how many Americans think that keeping us closed is an infringement on our rights as Americans? Guess what the number is, Bob? It's 15%.
Wow, shocking.
Who's not afraid to go back to sports stadiums, movie theaters, restaurants, and all that? Guess what the number is, Bob? 15%. So I think this proves my whole theory about 15% of the American public is insane.
And
I believe they had the commercial at the top of your show today.
That's right.
The stupid people of America. Idiots.
Yeah. God damn it. Those people are going to destroy this country. Those people are going to kill us all. The dummies and the suckers.
They might. God. They might. And there are two dangers. First of all, number one, never lose sight of the fact that they are a radical fringe minority, period. They do not in any way represent the feelings of the American people. We have the numbers to bear that out, and the numbers are overwhelming.
Yeah.
So that's know that, but also know that not only Bob's concerned that this is going to infect a lot of people, and it will. The other concern is it is influencing red state governors who are making decisions to reopen based on the cries of this tiny minority.
And it's all money ball for these guys. I mean, I think somehow, somewhere, they've got some kind of calculus that shows that if 20 people show up outside the state house and they're carrying AK-47s or AR-15s or whatever fucking movie prop that they get their hands on, they believe, the Republicans believe, that that somehow is a multiplier for the bump that they're going to get in the polls or the bump that they're going to get in the next election if they continue to appease these people. And it's just the ultimate dumb fuckery. I mean, that's kind of the word of the entire pandemic right now. Yeah. Dumb fuckery, because we've been seeing it left or right. We've been seeing it. In fact, the entire death toll that we were talking about at the top of the show, that was exacerbated by dumb fuckery. It was exacerbated by Donald Trump's dumb fuckery. Yeah, yeah.
The dumb fucker in chief, as a matter of fact.
That's right. I don't know. I'm not feeling very positive seeing all these idiots. As small as the groups may be, it only gets amplified if people like Ron DeSantis and people like Brian Kemp start paying too close attention to them and doing whatever it is they do, pandering to those people.
I think some of them, and I could see them, governors of especially Florida and Texas, doing a little bit of a delegate dance, trying to appease that nutball crowd.
Yeah.
While also, because you know you don't want to upset them. while trying to appease those of us who are concerned about our own and public health.
There's another option in all of this that I've been talking about on the show. I've got some additional information. I wrote a piece in Salon about this other option. We've got basically two options that have been on the table that everyone's been debating, you know, whether to reopen the country prematurely and risk, you know, who knows how many additional cases of coronavirus, how many deaths. Additional deaths. Yeah. Just in the name of trying to jumpstart the economy too early. And then the other option, of course, is to continue the stay at home orders, but then there's a downside for unemployment. There's a downside for the economy in that solution. But there is a third solution, and I absolutely want to revisit that just briefly here after we take a short break.
Because you tease.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to go full Keynesian here in a second. So hang on. I'm going to talk about another massive stimulus right after this.
Oh my God, we have an exciting new client, Literati.
Oh,
it's the number one book club for kids.
Oh, yeah.
I had to do some digging to find people young enough, but my ex just had a baby.
My nephews, 3 and 7 years old.
So perfect. We sent it to both of them. We're going to get reviews. It is for ages 0 to 12.
Yeah.
Right? And libraries, schools, bookstores are all closed.
Yeah.
Right? Literati has you covered with something truly unique. This subscription book club for kids was founded by two women to make it easy to find interesting books delivered right to your doorstep. No more scrolling online trying to find that perfect book for your child or to give as a gift. Each Literati box contains 5 books based on a theme with exclusive original art, personalized note to your child. What kid doesn't love receiving something in the mail? Home delivery, super important right now. And with their curated selection, only keep your favorites. Send the rest back for free for a limited time. Try it with Travis's nephews. Go to Literati.com/Stephanie for 25% off your first 2 orders. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go to Literati.com/Stephanie, 25% off your first 2 orders. That's Literati.com/Stephanie. Terms and conditions apply.
The Bob Seska Show.
Cold is the ultimate absence, shockingly measurable, though at some point all you feel is void. Cold air sticks on the insides of pockets and bags. Ooh. And the inevitable heat death of the universe plays on as a backdrop to our lives beyond that final exhale of expansion. You can find me dreaming of the other side.
This is Sister Species, the name of the band here.
Wow.
Chamber Pop. I love this. Oh my God. It's revelatory.
The song I'm sitting here I'm sitting here listening to it and trying to say, why do I love this so much? And I answer is, I don't know. I just do. This is great.
Me too, man. It is a song called Heat Death, Hold Me Here from their brand new album, Light Exchanges. Again, the band is called Sister Species. Link in the description. You have to download this new album. And it's I think it's out in May. But they've got an entire discography of previous albums. But this is a preview of their upcoming album. And you should definitely pick this one up. I love it. Yeah, it's called Chamber Pop.
My grandpa used to use a chamber pop.
I'm sitting on one right now.
I like that because I think it connotes chamber music.
Yeah.
And there's maybe a touch of that in there.
Right.
And then it has, of course, that pop sound, which I'm a sucker for. I'm a pop music guy all the way.
BobSeska.com/music. If you want to submit your songs to the show, we'll play them here. We'll also include them at the end of the month in our Indie Music Countdown. It's actually, I think, coming up on Sunday. I think there's another Indie Music Countdown. It's amazing it's already that time again. We're going to be doing another one on Sunday. All the songs from April.
Time flies when you're locked in your studio.
That's right. And lots of great music to play. So I'm so grateful to all of our indie bands. Okay.
You're really lucky. I mean, and I love the brass in that, by the way. That was one thing I really liked about it. And that made me think you're so lucky to get this, to have sort of this inflow of really some tremendous music. And these artists, I wish them all the luck in the world. I think that, you know, they've been amazing.
Oh, yeah.
The quality blows me away.
In fact, you can get your full-length preview of Heat Death, the new song that we played here, at sisterspecies.com. That's the direct link. So use that.
Right,
it's also in the description, so you can click on it there, too. Yay. Okay, we need a massive, massive stimulus. And I know that we spent $2 trillion on the CARE Act, and there have been some things by the Fed, some infusions of cash into the system through the Fed. But what we need right now is a super colossal version of the stimulus that Barack Obama passed in 2009 during the height of the Great Recession, during the previous recession. And this is intended to tide over the economy, tide over employment, tide over American workers, American employees, while they're staying at home, which is mandatory. First and foremost, in fact, I think Nancy Pelosi is even talking about this as a possible addition to a future stimulus, which is Andrew Yang's minimum guaranteed income, pass something like that, at least temporarily.
We're going to need socialism to bridge the gap between between our bouts with capitalism.
Absolutely.
And you know, when it comes to the cure being worse than the disease, I think he topped that over the weekend with the drink Clorox news conference.
That's where
the cure is worse than the disease.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. It's clear that we have to continue social distancing. It may be possible with social distancing after, and as has been recommended by experts, after you've seen a 2 or 3 week downtrend in the number of cases and the number of deaths and the number of positive tests, that then, you know, it's safe to begin carefully reopening with masks and social distancing. And I think we need some of that. It's just, I think, you know, clearly some governors have already dived into this helter-skelter, and we will pay for that later.
Yeah.
But you're right. Not everybody can do that. Some of us, some of the people in some of the riskier jobs are sort of forced to do it. At the lowest possible wages, we need a bridge to get us from point A to point B. And it's just a bridge, just like you said, just like the Obama rescue program was.
Yep.
It was a way of getting from one side of the canyon to the other without drowning. And this is we need it again. And obviously on a crazy bigger scale this time.
Oh, sure. But I mean, obviously we've done things like this before and they have in fact worked. I mean, during the Great Depression, there was the WPA, Public Works Projects, of course, with distancing guidelines for now. World War II style jobs mobilization, especially given how we're apparently at war against the virus. So why not take a war posture? World War II
of course,
saw the mobilization of the American economy economy where people were pitching in and doing what they had to do, the riveter on down, right?
Or were required to, under orders by the president, using the Defense Protection Act, which Trump still refuses to use. Mm-hmm. He believes that's not how we do things in America, even though it is. And as you've just pointed out, there have been multiple times throughout American history that we have, thank goodness we had socialism to fall back on when capitalism just wasn't working out. And it has been more than once. Our bridge from one side of capitalism back to the other side, it just took social programs to get us through.
Yeah, it is. It's just pumping money, federal money, into the economy because we can borrow it, we can print it. So
we have the presses.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Yeah.
Why not use those resources to infuse cash into the economy enough to tide us over as we stay at home? We're talking about maybe creating PPE, consumer items, other essential supplies, maybe a small business lease and debt relief, a virtual retraining. We're all doing Zoom meetings and so on. Why not virtual? Yes. Retraining for green economy jobs.
We need that training anyway. This is the perfect time to do it.
Exactly. We can pay people to be trained, pay people to join those retraining sessions. Plus, we're talking about expanding food stamps, unemployment benefits, expanding COBRA, which is the Gap Health Insurance Program.
Because for the 26 million jobs lost just in the last 5 weeks, a lot of those people lost their health insurance along with it because they got their health insurance through their employer. Now both are gone. Mm-hmm. That's a double whammy for people, making them extra vulnerable.
Yeah, and in fact, we should expand ACA subsidies for health insurance, for the Obamacare, Medicaid subsidies. You can expand that too. And these are all investments in the economy that actually produce a return, a solid return on the investment. These are great investments in the economy. We're talking about something like food stamps alone. You invest a dollar in federal money in food stamps, the return in economic stimulus is $1.73. That's one hell of a good investment. Right. If you're making an additional 73 cents on that $1 investment, that's an investment you should pursue. Meanwhile, extending unemployment benefits generates $1.64 in stimulus for every dollar spent. $1 in infrastructure spending creates $1.59 in stimulus. $1 invested in state governments, and of course, states, Mitch McConnell's talking about letting states go bankrupt. Well, if you take $1 in federal money invested in a state government, it generates $1.36 in return to the national economy. But meanwhile, Donald Trump was with Ron DeSantis this morning talking about a payroll tax holiday. That fucking canard that's not only going to damage Social Security and Medicare, but it would only create $1.29 in stimulus for every dollar spent. So it's a less advantageous investment.
Conservatives have a long history of pinching pennies and letting the dollars fly.
Yeah.
Especially now in recent years when they've let so many dollars fly.
That's right.
You know, it's too bad we're not smarter.
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, that takes us back to the idiots of America.
Mm-hmm.
But if we were smarter, we would see this tragic time as an opportunity.
Yes.
Because we can't make the tragedy any less tragic, but we can use this opportunity to learn and retool and do things differently when we go back. This was an opportunity for us to come back as nicer people.
Yeah.
This was an opportunity for us to change the face of business and education. This was an opportunity to, as you said, train people for a green economy. And the opportunity is not completely lost, but it's getting pretty damn late in the game.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we can still do it. But if ever there was a time to do these things, this is the time.
Yep. Make America smart again. Make America think again. Whatever you want to call it. Yeah. Get rid of the dumb people if you want to break away from Trump's red hat slogan. There are things specifically that are at stake in this election, and that's one of them. The fact that we've got a decent man as the Democratic nominee who is going to be running against Donald Trump. And now not only Russia, but some leftover hotheads from the Bernie movement and so on are pushing a scandal that I want to talk about on the postmortem show coming up on our Patreon page. Lots to say about that particular thing. And that is all entirely intended to derail this process that we're talking about, Buzz, derail the process of reclaiming decency as an American mm-hmm. value, oh, yeah. of reclaiming decorum from the office of the presidency. I mean, and then you could do a whole list of 1,001 different things from there on down. I mean, it is a no-brainer, but at the same time, it's something that is absolutely mandatory because another Trump term is absolutely unacceptable in every
way, shape, or form. It's amazing and terrifying to me when I see the rabid enthusiasm of Trump supporters. Drove past some the other day on a safe errand. There were some idiots standing on a corner without masks, close together, waving Trump signs and stuff. There weren't many of them. There were, I don't know, a dozen or fewer. So it was a sad little demonstration.
Yeah.
But it was there nevertheless. And I see the video clips on social media of Trump supporters, including the ones who aren't acting. You know, it just astounds me, the religious fanaticism for this guy, the intractability of his supporters.
Yeah.
I can't get over it. I can't believe when this all started, silly, naive little me thought, well, they'll see the error of their ways. They'll wise up. No, many of them won't. Many of them never will. And many of them will remain angry about it long after he's gone.
I don't understand it from the very basic reason. And we could obviously list those 1,000 things. There's probably a lot more than 1,000. But, I mean, there are 18,000 lies when Washington Post stopped keeping track. So it's well beyond 1,000. But they
stopped.
Yeah. I mean, nevertheless. I mean, I haven't seen a new publishing of the total Trump lies list lately.
It usually comes out around the second or third or fourth day of the month because it takes them a couple of days to tally the previous month's numbers. So always look for those from the Washington Post a couple of days into a new month. So a new count should be very, very near.
Yeah. Well, the staggering thing is, even in spite of all those things, the basic concept of Donald Trump still amazes me from the perspective you were just talking about, Buzz, which is that how do all these people love this guy so much? How have they landed on this guy? Of all the standard bearers that they could choose from, they land on the cartoon character who tried to sell steaks in Sharper Image stores in the mall. I mean, this is the weirdo who said, oh, this guy is going to be our messiah.
Part of it is they were hoodwinked by the snake oil salesman, but the other part of it is, and I really think this is the key, and I think we've known this from the beginning.
Yeah.
He embodies their anger. I was speaking to a close relative who's very anti-Trump, but shares some of these frustrations that so many Americans feel. They feel that too much, and it isn't always a racial thing. It certainly isn't in the case of this relative. But there's this feeling that some people are lazy and they're just, you know, sucking off the system when the rest of us are working so hard and they're doing nothing and just collecting and they're taking our money. And why do we have to work so hard and they get to be lazy and not do anything and collect the money? And what I told my relative, like I said, who was already anti-Trump, we don't have to worry about this person from that standpoint. But he did share this concern that, some people are cheating the system. And the argument for that, for all of us, I think, is, are they cheating the system as much as Exxon?
Yeah.
Is the amount of, there is always going to be a certain amount of cheating, both at the Exxon level and at the hood level. And everywhere in between, there's always a certain, you know this from your classrooms in school, that a couple of the kids were cheaters. Everybody else played by the rules. One or two of them cheated. You're going to get that everywhere. That's almost the cost of doing business. So now let's talk about how much they're cheating you. How much money are they taking out of your paycheck?
Yeah.
Not nearly as much as the Defense Department. Not nearly as much as Exxon.
That's right.
So, again, this is a case of watching the pennies and bitching about the pennies and being angry about the pennies while the dollars fly.
Yeah.
And it's this miseducation of the American public, this misperception that they're somehow being cheated by the little guy when really they're being cheated by the big guy, is Trump encapsulated that anger, the anger that they felt, this anti-government feeling. And so it's very easy to understand, and we should keep that in mind as we try to figure out a way to keep this sort of thing from happening again.
And Trump was the kind of the Christmas tree in all of this, in a horrible, horrible sense, that it was really the propagandists like Fox News and the Russian GRU and,
right,
and all points in between that kind of propped him up, that kind of built Trump into what he is now to these people specifically, to the red hats, to his loyalists. And it's all a matter of, they were able to attain a level of brainwashing among their audience to the point where they can feed their audience their own manufactured reality. And here's a case in point that just I think occurred maybe last night on Tucker Carlson's show. Well, Tucker Carlson says that there is no scientific justification for quarantine. He says that the curve flattened, but quarantine had nothing to do with it. He said the virus just isn't nearly as deadly as we thought it was, which is entirely horseshit. This is entirely horseshit to backstop Donald Trump. And again, this is the manufactured reality, Buzz. Once they've got the people sucked into the cult, they can feed them any level of bullshit, and it's really going to get, I mean, we haven't even really begun to see the damage that that's going to create. We started to see the early hints of it now with these protests, but it's going to, I think it's going to expand from here because they've got the taste of it now.
I've seen variations on this kind of joke before, but I saw this on Twitter today. It said, what person do you think is least likely to get laid, and why did you choose Tucker Carlson? I love that. I love that kind of that preset of joke.
Yeah.
To answer your question, I mean, I really think that a lot of this goes back to the days of Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich and the moral majority, because the rich, greedy people who topped the Republican Party back then, as now, figured out that the way to win elections, the edge that they could get to win elections, would be to wrap up the moral majority, to wrap up the religious right, you know, and to go for things like anti-abortion and prayer in schools and all of those hot button issues in places like Arkansas.
Oh yeah.
And they found a way to go, and so they found a way to use, in many cases, poor white trash to do their bidding for them, you know, to go to the polls and cast votes for them by appealing to that crowd. Trump elevated that to an art form. And the anger, Trump has made things worse for all of us, not just for himself. but he the setup was there. You know, Butch had already gotten one of his gang members to get on his hands and knees behind you. And then Butch came along and gave you a push. So you fell backwards over the over this guy sawhorsing behind you. You were set up for this. And this is how they did it. They conned poor working white people into voting for them. And that's how Republicans came to power. And that's how they've held on to it. And are still trying to, but that's how they've done it for such a very long time.
There's a piece in the Daily Beast, Buzz, you should check out. It's a Sam Stein article, and I think it was posted today. It is the headline is Fox Loving Parent, Fox News. First of all, point of order, the channel, the cable news channel operated by Fox is known as Fox News. It is not known as Fox. Fox is the network.
Right. TV entertainment network owned by Disney.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
But Fox News is the cable news network. So please don't write Fox when you mean Fox News. Okay. That aside, that's me being an editor. Okay. Sam Stein. The headline is Fox News loving parents are driving coronavirus paranoid kids insane. And this is something that we're going to start to see as a consequence of this Fox Newsification of this pandemic, of this this existence of Fox News, where what's happening is now that there is this thirst for reopening the economy, whatever the fuck that means, there are going to be the Fox News parents saying that, yeah, why don't we have a barbecue this weekend? Why don't we get together? No. We can have social distancing, but we'll all get together and be together this weekend. And then those of us who say, Maybe that's a bad idea. We're still supposed to be isolating. We're still supposed to be quarantined because we don't want to spread this. I could be carrying it. I don't know. We haven't had testing yet. What, 4% right. of the country has been tested so far?
Less than that, best, Bob. It's last I checked, it was 1.6%. They hope to double that when experts say really it should be 5 million to 25 million people a day.
Yeah.
So we're not even scratching the surface.
Well, if you look around Facebook, you can see a lot of, shall we say, people who are closer to the Donald Trump demographic suggesting mm-hmm. that we just starting to throw in some things here or there, some arguments about how social distancing in some cases, in some areas is unnecessary, et cetera, in order to either coerce their children into getting together for that Memorial Day weekend barbecue or whatever it goes. But suffice to say, there's going to be a butting of heads between voting blocks and generations about all this.
I hope so. I mean, I know wish for conflict usually, but I think if people stand up and draw a line, that's important at this in this health crisis.
Yeah. So again, it is one of those things where as Fox News continues to spread the Donald Trump message, and even while Donald Trump doesn't say necessarily during his Trump show, okay, let's reopen now, Fox News is kind of taking his maybe we should reopen in May or maybe after that. Taking that inch and turning it into a mile.
But as a side observation, is the dog wagging the tail or is the tail wagging the dog? And the reason I ask that in this case is I think statistically, if we sat down and counted them out, I think we would find that Trump's positions, policies, and tweets are more often inspired by things he saw on Fox than Fox is by things they heard from the president.
Well, that could be. I mean, that could be the primary direction of the bullshit stream. But I tend to think it's more of an Ouroboros.
It's important to know which direction the bullshit is flowing.
It is really important. But I tend to think that Fox News feeds Trump, and then Trump feeds Fox News. So it's the snake eating its tail metaphor.
Yeah, it's mutual. I just think Fox is leading in this ballgame.
Yeah, probably is. All right, well, you know what? I want to talk about the 2020 election. Rachel Bitticoffer, who was on the show last week, has a new forecast out that's out today, and I want to talk about some of the results of that new forecast. Encouraging, but don't get happy. We'll be back right after these words.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska.
This is After the Fight. You might be wrong from at the end of it all. BobSeska.com/music if you want to submit. Oh my God, I'm watching this video now on Endless Loop on Twitter, and it is Mike Pence at the Mayo Clinic.
It's like Mayo on Mayo.
Exactly right. It is Mike Pence, mayonnaise himself, wandering around the Mayo Clinic without a fucking mask.
Well, sure, he's perfectly safe there.
Oh, my God.
They don't store any pathogens there, Bob.
There are no sick people at the Mayo Clinic that he could some infectious disease from. Oh, geez. Well, the good news is that literally everyone else in this video that I'm looking at is wearing a mask, except for Mike Pence.
That way they won't catch whatever he has.
That's right. Let's see.
The election.
Yeah, we have to talk about the election. Yes, absolutely. Uh-huh. Rachel Bitticoffer has a brand new model out today. And it's mostly good news. And I urge you not to get happy.
Never.
And once again, I provide the qualifier that don't get happy is not invented by me. I have stolen it from someone else. Just so you know. And applied it to politics. It was used in a context that... It's unrelated to politics, but I have employed it for the sake of
I have politics. No idea what you're talking about.
Buzz knows. What are you talking about? Okay, so according to Rachel Bitticoffer's model, we've got some pretty solid news here, not only in terms of the presidency, in terms of the presidential election, but also in terms of the Senate and the House. As of right now, Rachel Bitticoffer is projecting that the Democrats will retain 235 House seats with 8 toss-ups, a full 8 toss-ups. Some of those ones
are out and vote, people.
South Jersey, there's one in upstate New York, there's another toss-up district in Minnesota and central Michigan. I see one in Illinois. But it's looking pretty good.
Mail.
Yeah, pretty good for the Democrats as far as retaining the House. In terms of the Senate, we're looking at at least at this point, according to Rachel, the Democrats will take over a narrow majority with 50 seats in the United States Senate, which would put, hopefully, a Democratic vice president in the tiebreaker position.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Got to have both. Got to have both if you want to get something done.
That's right.
And I think, you know, I don't know, man. The Democrats have had their chance. There was a period during the Obama administration where they controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House, and just didn't get a hell of a lot done. And there may be reasons for that, but the bottom line is the same. They didn't get a hell of a lot done. I'm thinking, and in fact, I know, Democrats are a lot more motivated this time and will not, I hope, I know, squander this opportunity to make the necessary changes to clean up government in much the same way we did after Watergate.
And in fact, there on the Senate side, there are 2 swing seats. That's all good. I mean, so there, in fact, if the Democrats have a really good election day, there could be 52 seats, a 52-seat majority for the Democrats in the United States Senate, which is especially important if the horrible nightmare scenario occurs and Donald Trump is reelected. At least we've got control of Congress. And
yeah, we'll take what we can get, but we really should get off our asses and vote by mail if necessary, if possible.
Right.
If we really want to get things done, we really need both. If we really want to do this right, it'll be great whatever we win. And according to the latest USA Today, a Suffolk University poll, Biden now leads Trump 44% to 38%. He leads him. That's in a 3-way race. In a 2-way race, if there's a third party candidate, in a 2-way race, he leads Trump by 10%, 50% to 40.
Yeah, just so one thing to bear in mind, I hate to be the Debbie Downer in this, but the RCP average, Real Clear Politics, for this date in 2016, for April 28th, 2016, was Clinton 49, Trump 40.5. So Clinton had a 8.5% lead at this point.
But there are differences this time. We don't have the Hillary versus Bernie situation we had before. We don't have Hillary versus Joe Biden as we did in the primaries back then. In fact, Hillary today endorsed Joe Biden. You know who's next? Have you noticed how this is going up the scale? Who do you think might be next to endorse Biden, Bob?
I think it's going to be. I think it'll be Hillary Clinton.
Well, that was some weird shit.
Yeah,
I think all the heavy hitters now have endorsed Joe Biden, and that's the important thing.
Absolutely. Well, here's one more important thing: the presidential projection by Rachel Bitticoffer as of now.
Yes,
she is forecasting 289 electoral votes for the Democratic ticket. 181 electoral votes for Donald Trump and Mike Pence.
Oh, man.
So that's outstanding news. That means she's got Joe Biden winning Arizona. She's got Joe Biden winning that trifecta from 2016, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. Yeah. She's got Joe Biden winning Virginia. And then all the rest of the blue states, as you can imagine. The swing states right now are Florida. These are all toss-ups.
Yeah.
Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Iowa, and the Omaha electoral votes in Nebraska.
Yeah, so, this is all a big deal because those are very red territories, except for Florida, which has been very purple for a long time.
Right.
And if you've ever been purple, you know just how painful that can be.
It is excruciating. But so 289 for Joe Biden, 181 for Donald Trump. And I'm going to do a quick calculation here we've got.
And while you're calculating, let me say here's another difference between this and 2016 is we're looking at an electoral college race that is not as close as the one. And so this time it's not going to be down to 77,000 votes or whatever it was before deciding this election in Trump's favor.
Right.
I think it goes back to what Bob and I have talked about months and months ago, and that is Trump fatigue. I think everybody's just like, okay, this is it. And can you imagine, I was just thinking when I cried out, my God, a second ago, I was thinking, can you imagine how peaceful it will be?
I know.
Can you imagine how quiet and just, you know, I mean, just not having that in your face every day. Oh my God. Yeah. I can't even, you know, let's all vote just for that.
Yeah. You know, it's like sitting in vomit or something horrendous. Like I was thinking about this as I was watching his press conference with Ron.
We have our title, Sitting in Vomit.
There we go. Thank you. I was thinking that when I was watching him with Ron DeSantis today in the Oval Office, I was like, you know what this is watching Donald Trump? It's like barfing. It's like no one, we talk about barfing. No one likes to barf. And it's that horrible, horrible feeling. And it's not just the urge that you get when you watch Donald Trump. Literally, when Donald Trump is talking, it is like the sensation of barfing, whether you have to barf or not. But anyway, so we've got 68 toss-up electoral votes between North Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Iowa, partial Nebraska, partial Maine. If Joe Biden runs away with all 68 of those electoral votes on top of the 289 that are relatively secure for him, according to Rachel Bitticoffer's model, that would put Joe Biden at 357 electoral votes in the election. That is more along the lines of what we need to see, what we should be striving for in this election, because once again, it's not just about beating Donald Trump, which will be fine in and of itself, sure, but it's also about humiliating Donald Trump electorally to the point where people will hesitate to incorporate Trumpism into their campaigns.
Right. Kill the brand.
Yeah, the
kill
copycats the will be hesitating.
There's a bumper sticker for us. Kill the brand.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to pursue that as the ultimate goal in this, which means mobilizing everyone, which means quashing this insane, I don't even know what to call it. Because I don't want to undermine what Tara Reid is saying, but at the same time, I think its importance is being overblown when you provide the alternative, when you look at the other guy.
Yeah. Well, it isn't just that, and that shouldn't be a reason for excusing bad behavior. Two words about Tara Reid: Russia connection.
There you go.
That's and we can talk about that some more because we just give and give.
Yeah. We're going to be talking about Tara Reid and the allegations against Joe Biden coming up here on the Postmortem Show. That is on our Patreon page, BobSeskaShow.com or Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. Either one of those URLs will take you right to our Patreon page. Sign up for $5 a month and you'll get our Postmortem Show, which is where we just keep on talking at the end of this music. And we stick that up on the Patreon page every Tuesday and Thursday. And that is the Postmortem Show. Meanwhile, make sure to support and listen to Buzz Burbank News and Comment every Thursday. It's the best hour of news you're going to get all week. It is buzzburbank.com, also realmnetwork.com. That's R-E-L-M network.com and everywhere you get your podcasts, of course. So you know what? I also wanted to mention, too, $15 level on our Patreon page. It's something I rarely talk about, but if you want the ultimate edition of this show, that is the free show without commercials. We take out all the commercials, and then we tack on the post-mortem show at the end. It is like one big seamless show that you can listen to at your leisure, and that is called the Ultimate Edition on our Patreon page. $15 a month gets you that, plus the after-party show on Fridays and the post-mortem show. It's everything. You get everything that we offer for the $15 a month. So thank you to everyone who's signed up, especially recently. I really, really appreciate it. It's really touching, the generosity, and I couldn't thank you enough.
And if you have some change left over, buy extra stamps from the Postal Service and write your senator and representative, even if he's an asshole, to tell him to keep the Postal Service funded and give it the emergency funding it needs during this crisis.
Oh, God, that's a whole other issue.
So we can vote by mail.
That's it. And also, I was on the Batman on Film podcast recently.
Yes,
you should listen to that, too, if you're a nerd like me. Yes. Gigantic nerdgasm on the show. I just kept talking and talking and talking. Okay, post-mortem show coming up next, folks. See you over there. Bye-bye.
Stay safe.